Hey, this is Colton Tran, director of The Bellkeeper, and you're listening to The Graveyard Show.
Welcome to The Graveyard.
And welcome to another edition of the Graveyard Show podcast. I am a caretaker, and the graveyard is open. There's something I wanted to lead off the show with. I know it's hard to get into the Halloween mood right now when there's so much violence and tragedy happening in the world. Unfortunately, there has been a lot of real horror occurring before our very eyes. I don't need to get into it. You've seen the news. I don't want you to think that it's gone unnoticed. I want to be sensitive to that, while still offering you a distraction from these current events, even for just a little while. If I can do that, then I think I've done my job as an entertainment podcaster. And one of the ways I'm going to do that is by interviewing the man you heard at the top of the show. Colton Tran will be here in just a moment to talk about his new film, The Bellkeeper, which is in theaters and on demand starting today, and the film will also be available on DVD starting December 5th. And you can also catch the trailer for The Bellkeeper on the Graveyard Show podcast YouTube channel as well. You can go to youtube.com/@graveyardshowpodcast to find the Graveyard Show podcast YouTube channel and the trailer for The Bellkeeper, among many other trailers and other content outside of the podcast. Now, a quick reminder that you can place your pre-order for In Search of Darkness 1990 to 1994 at 90shorrordoc.com. That's 90shorrordoc.com, 90shorrordoc.com. You can see all of the different bundles available and what works for your budget. A reminder that you have until the end of October to place your pre-order for the film. And if you missed my interview with the director and writer of the film, David Weiner, he was my guest on the previous podcast. You can just go one show back to find it there. Well, you know what that sound in the background means. It means my guest is here, and it's time for me to get to work. Joining me now is Colton Tran, the director of the new film, The Bellkeeper, which is available in theaters and on demand starting October 13th and will be available on DVD December 5th. Colton, welcome to The Graveyard Show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. We'll talk about your film, The Bellkeeper, in just a minute. But before I get into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about you. Is it true that you were learning Final Cut Pro at the age of 12? How did that happen?
That's true. I grew up in Utah, and my next door neighbor, we moved into a new neighborhood. I was about 10 years old, and I became best friends with my neighbor, Allison, and her dad is a filmmaker. So he was directing and producing, editing. And one day he asked her and I to be like an extra in one of his commercials. And we were like, yeah. And this, at this point we were like 12. And so we did it, and I just like fell in love with being on set and just the process. And he saw that we were falling in love with it. And so he was like, hey, do you guys want to make some stuff? And so he let us use his camera, and we were shooting. I love horror. So we started like shooting little horror things. But then he was like, taught us iMovie. And then, but we learned that so quickly, because every day after school, we would just come home and like want to like write or make movies or whatever, while everyone else was just playing outside. So we were doing that. And we quickly just graduated to Final Cut. I remember he like forced us to, because it was like a transition where we were editing on Final Cut. He says, you guys need to learn this. And then when he walked out of the room, we're like, let's just switch back to iMovie real quick. But then eventually we just learned that, and also Photoshop. He taught us that. So we became very fluent in those things very quickly, so that we could do our graphic design for our posters and DVD covers and wow, et cetera. So it was really, really beneficial to have a mentor that age.
So would you say you were on the path to becoming an editor, or were you always looking at directing as your final, you know, destination, or at least part of the final destination, I guess you could say?
Yeah, no, I've always loved editing as well, because it's, as a director, you can help fulfill that vision, especially when I'm on set. I save a lot of time because my shot lists are pretty intricate. But for me, director is first and foremost, and that's what my passion was growing up and what I moved to Los Angeles for. When I do have projects that I want to try to maintain as close as to the vision as possible. I will edit myself, but also I'm totally fine releasing that to someone else if the project calls for it.
So one thing that I'm noticing with your generation of young filmmakers that are here now, a lot of you are playing that dual role of director and editor. It seems to be a very, it makes sense. And would you say that it helps you put together your shooting list when you start your day or when you're putting your ideas together for the movie? Does the editor's eye say, wait, don't do this, do that, because you may need, you know, whatever, fill in the blank?
Yep, 100,000,000%. Because when I am doing my shot list, I already know exactly how I want to shoot it. And then when you go on set, you know, and you can like visualize how, because your timing and the cuts and when you're overshooting and when you're not. Because, you know, I feel like that's when I'm an actor on sets too, I notice how much people overshoot. They just, it's crazy. And so if I have the beginning of something and get safety for it, and I'm like, I already know I have this part that I want to use. Take two is going to be the shot that I use for the beginning. I will start midway through and just shoot till the end until we get what we want. So we're not wasting so much time from the beginning if it works that way. But if there's something that leads up in the beginning that benefits the end, then I'll do the whole thing. But it's like that. Like, I'll know what I'm overshooting, what I'm not, what I need to be where I know I'm going to cut. So I'm not lingering on for too long. I think it's been very beneficial just before production and during.
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as like doing too much coverage, there is a thing to be said about that, because some directors do overshoot. And I'm sure, too, it's one of those things where you get into the editing room and you're like, what the hell am I going to use? I shot every possible angle on this thing. And I'm sure for you, it's just a matter of going, here's how I see it. Here's how I'm going to do it. The clock is ticking the moment the day begins. We have X amount of hours to get this done. So I'm sure it has helped speed up the process of getting your day going.
Yeah, it does. And it's cool. Because, like, I, you know, obviously I have a script supervisor on set, and she was giving me intricate notes on this film. But at the end of the day, when I jumped into cutting it, I remember the scenes and the shots that I was so happy about. And I knew that was it, you know? So the notes weren't even that beneficial, actually, because I was the editor as well and the director. So I remember being there and knowing exactly what I wanted to utilize. And so my edits come together pretty quickly. Like, a rough cut for me is pretty tight, you know, and then getting notes from producers and whatnot and the studio, like, happen pretty quickly. Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things I've noticed is that for the younger generation of filmmakers, because of digital, there's always something new that's out there. There's Final Cut, there's DaVinci, you know, in audio, there's Pro Tools, there's, you know, Logic, there's... Yeah. There seems to be something new coming out all the time. So with your editor's hat on, is that something where you're constantly looking or talking to colleagues going, hey, what are you using right now? Or what did you use?
Yeah, I do. I do ask them that because I'm curious. But for me, I had to transition from Final Cut to Premiere because it was one of those things that I didn't like. I don't like Final Cut 10, and I cannot believe they did what they did, but I just don't understand why they did that. I know a lot of people and editors I know were doing Avid, like going to Avid, and then also like Resolve, you know, so that because they can be coloring and editing as well. But the layout of DaVinci is not my favorite, so I do edit, and I'm not a colorist, and I don't consider myself one, so I don't feel like that's going to be beneficial to be cutting in Resolve. Yeah, I think Premiere is exactly what it needs to be right now. I can do everything I need to do on
sure.
Premiere.
Yeah. Now, you have experience directing shorts and music videos. Would you say that that has helped prepare you for directing a feature?
Yes. There's a lot of actual short films I've done, but also like proof of concept shorts that are like scenes from movies or trailers that I want to do as a feature, and we already have the feature to go along with it. So there's like a bigger picture vision already that's going like hand in hand with these shorts. And so that was, it did prepare me a lot for these features. And it's crazy because the Bellkeeper comes out on the 13th, and I have another feature coming out tomorrow that I shot last July. And then I had a movie I shot in 2020 that came out in January. So there's literally three features that I've done that are coming out in the same year. It's funny how that happened, how they all kind of fell into the same year. But yeah, it definitely helped lead up to all this. And it didn't feel overwhelming doing a feature film. It felt exactly like it felt to do a short, to tell like a narrative story in general, no matter how long it is, you know? So yeah, I think it definitely all prepared me for that.
You mentioned that you were a fan of horror when you were younger. What were some of the movies or maybe books that influenced you?
I mean, I loved Goosebumps, but I remember being exposed to Chucky at a young age, and my dad scared me so bad. I remember being like traumatized by that. Now, I love Chucky now, but I remember the experience was horrifying. And then I remember sneaking to watch Tales from the Crypt when I was a kid too, and I loved The Crypt Keeper. And then the one that really, really got me into it was when my dad brought Scream home and had me and my brother watch it. And I just like fell in love with that film. I love Wes Craven. I just love that new type of horror that was introduced, and it was very, and like, so then I just became addicted. And when we started making movies, I would like recreate Scream. And then, those are the films that got me into horror.
It's interesting. I love hearing what the younger filmmakers' influences are, because for me back in the day, it was, you know, the original Draculas and the Frankensteins we were watching on TV, and then the Hammer horror, you would get a lot of those on TV. So, you know, I grew up a lot with that. And now, I'm sorry.
But I was gonna say, one of my favorites, speaking of Dracula, was like the Abbott and Costello like meets Frankenstein.
Sure,
like,
yeah,
that movie was so good. So I would watch. I love Dracula. He's my favorite Universal monster. But sorry.
Okay. I knew I turned the corner in my life when I was talking to somebody who was like probably 23, 22, and they were like, "Hey, what classic horror movies would you recommend?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, Dracula, you know, Karloff's Frankenstein." And I stopped myself and I said, "Wait, when you say classic," and they're like, "Well, you know, Halloween and Friday the 13th." I'm like, "Oh my God, I've turned the corner in my life." But let's get into your film, The Bellkeeper. So what can you tell everybody out there what the film's about?
This film is about a group of kids that are doing like a little documentary, and they want to debunk some urban legends around the country. And so the first stop is Bell Lake. And supposedly, if you ring this bell, the urban legend is this guy named Hank comes after you and kills you. And so, of course, this group of friends is going to do it. And there's your tropes that you're like running into, and different, like, you know, your each individual character that represents a certain type of, you know, stereotype. And then, you know, you just kind of see how it unfolds and what if the urban legend is true or not. Yeah.
So how did you end up being attached to the project?
So my friend Mike Manning, who is one of the actors in this film, he approached me, and we have a past anyways, because him and I acted in a Disney Channel movie together like 10 years ago. And that's how we met, became really good friends and stayed friends. And also then he produced a short that I did. And so we had like a business relationship as well, which is fun. And we can create together and travel together. And so he was like, "Hey, Colton, listen, this project has funding, has distribution already, but they need a director." And like, there was a whole other story into it, because the previous people that were attached to it had already shot a part of the movie. And so when he came to me, he's like, "Listen, they need to redo this entire movie." And I was like, "Cool." And so I read the script, and I loved it. I like the concept, because I feel like it's genre melding in a way where it's like it's slasher meets a possession film. And I think that's really fun. But I was like, "Hey, I will do this if I can bring on one of my writing partners, Luke Jensen, and do like a revision," because it was too campy and I wanted to like make it a little more grounded. But again, a lot of that had to do with the cast I brought on, because I feel like this movie could have been really, really campy, which it still is. I wanted to lean into that, but I feel like it has a grounded feeling to it, and with the cast, and like some heart to it, which I feel like a lot of horror films just don't have, especially slashers, because you don't really care about the characters. You just like want to see them die. And like, and the fact that these, I feel like there is a lot of heart, like I was saying, you do care about them. And when they do die, it's not just like they were gone. Like the other characters actually do mention them again, like, especially because the one that Liam is his brother, you know, in those situations. I think it's just cool that we leaned into a little more.
Yeah,
with that.
You make the kills more meaningful, because if you care about the characters, even though you don't have to be in love with them, but you have to have some sort of like affinity for them. So when they get offed, you know, you feel it, and you know, it's not just a body count.
Yeah. Like you've like been connected to them in some way. Yeah. It's not just a body count. And, I don't know. That was one of those things that I was really happy about with this film, because it was funny, because it was supposed to be delivered as an action horror, because Randy Couture was in it, of course.
Yeah.
And I remember one of our first initial notes where the studio was like, "So this is reading a little more, horror drama than action horror." I'm like, sorry. But like, you know, I mean, that was my first time really directing that much action. That's not usually my go-to. So that was one of the things when I came on board this, I was like, because you, if you read the script beforehand, it was like insane how much action was in this thing. So I was like, as long as we ground it a little bit, because especially what they were calling for, they wanted to shoot this in a certain amount of days. I was like, we have to be realistic about what we're doing here.
What kind of shooting list, or I should say, what kind of shooting schedule did you have? How many days?
We shot in 14 days, and which is not. Yeah, we shot this entire movie in 14 days, and yeah. So, but you know, I have done quicker than that. My first feature that came out, the Lionsgate film in January, we shot in 6 days in Utah in a cabin. But it was confined into one location. So that was helpful, obviously. But this one was not. We were like, a bunch of different locations. So it was a challenge.
14 days of action, of effects, of night work. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was crazy. But that's, again, the reason why, one of the reasons why Mike was like, he would be perfect for this, because I'm an editor as well. And so it is very beneficial for me on set to save us time and not overshoot and get exactly what we need, but keep it moving, you know?
I mean, that's amazing. Wow. I'm incredibly impressed, really. That is amazing.
Yeah, and it was crazy because there was no days we even went over, so yeah.
Wow. Wow. Crew must have loved you and the cast.
Yeah.
You mentioned Randy Couture, who does play the bellkeeper. He is an accomplished MMA fighter, amateur wrestler. How much did that help you for him to be playing the role of the bellkeeper?
It was very beneficial because he obviously is so experienced in that way. And it's funny because he is this like hulking, big, like mean looking guy, but he's such a teddy bear, of course. And he was so great to work with. He really, I think, really wanted to understand this character. And even when we did ADR and stuff like that, we had to like toughen him up sometimes because he's just so sweet and it was coming through that way. And I was like, we need to be scared of you. and you know, because he did a scene with his daughter too, and he got emotional, and it was really cool because, you know, we were finding that good balance together and having that cool like chemistry with, you know, as a director, with as an actor. And it was cool because he's like, I've never gotten emotional like that in a scene. So that was really cool to experience. And obviously with his experience, we had a stunt double for him, but at the end of the day, when we went into the stunts, he wanted to do them himself. And I was like, cool, like this is awesome that he's just gung ho, like, let's do this. I'm going to do it myself because, you know, obviously that's really helpful.
Yeah.
So he did all his own stunts. Yeah.
You also had Chaz Bono and Bonnie Aarons in the film. Of course, she's the nun from the Conjuring series. How did you end up casting them?
So when I was brought onto this project, those three were already cast. So one of the producers is with a management company that the PR or they both represent Chaz and Bonnie, and so they kind of just came together, and I thought that was, I love Bonnie, and like I love, you know, her as the nun is just so I was excited to have that challenge because I've seen her in a couple little parts, but as the nun, she's just this powerful, has this powerful presence, and her look is amazing, but she has no lines. It's just like how she looks and how she's, like I said, her presence in those movies. And so to work with her and having scenes and lines and playing with that was really fun because she's super talented and really passionate about what she does. And so that was fun to work with her in that way. And then we became very close after, like, she called me, she's like, we're all going to see the Nun too. Come with us. And so saw that with her, which was fun because, you know, she's just a character and it's fun. And she's, just so sweet.
Nice. As we begin to wrap this up here, talk about shooting at night. How much of this was done at night, and talk about the turnaround time and how to get your body acclimated to do that.
See, for me, when I'm directing, it's horrifying how my body and mind work together because I can function with no food mainly. But that's why I have to have people be like, hey, look, here's, eat this, you know, because I'll eat at lunch and our breaks and stuff. But like, I'm still like planning the next shots and our shot list and everything. But I just want to make sure that I'm surrounded by a team that is just not ego driven because my DP, I've worked with him on several of my other projects and he's amazing and we work so well together. But if things need to go over, if he needs to get a hotel closer because we're running, not running over, but just because he knows it's so late and we're wrapping early and like our next call, like we have to be on set the next morning, there was just no drama. There's no arguing. It was like, all right, we're doing what we need to do. We're making a movie. And that just created such a good energy on set. And I pride myself on making sure that happens. Like, I want to come on set, give everyone a greeting, my actors, my, you know, crew. And then it's like, all right, now we're down to business. I'm talking to my DP. We go over my shot list. We go to every location. We go through every moment. So he knows what's going on, so they can start lighting and setting things up as the rest of the pieces are moving. But I just want people to be happy. And if there's something that arises, like an issue, I will pull a producer aside, and it's very, very private, because as soon as people start to see that something's going on or something's happening, they just subconsciously start to, like, it's domino effect. Like, they'll be working because they have to, but they're like, what's going on? And the energy shifts and the actors are like, you know, and then people start to snap, just weird things happen. So I just wanted to make sure there was a really good energy, especially if we were asking people to work like such a grueling schedule of like day shoots and then leading into straight into a night shoot sometimes. And again, it was like in the midst of like COVID. So there was a day where one of our leads got tested and had COVID. And so we had to immediately reschedule everything on the spot that day. It was interesting. It was a very interesting time to shoot a movie, but we did it.
Well, I'm sure that was easy to do with a 14-day shooting schedule.
No, for real, especially like you said, yeah, with all the night shoots, too, because it was freezing, but you're also dealing with so much lighting because you need to set up this world. But again, I feel like a lot of the preparation was there in my shot. Like, me and my DP worked so well together that we just flowed straight into each different moment and each day, and we're able to knock it out.
Well, you and your team did a great job putting this movie together, really. If anybody wants to follow you online on social media, can they find you on any of the platforms?
Yeah, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, they're all Colton Tran. So just at Colton Tran. I think TikTok has an extra N on it because someone snatched it. But regardless, if you just type Colton Tran, it'll pop up. Those awesome. Across all time.
Awesome. Yeah. The Bellkeeper in theaters starting October 13th and will be coming to DVD on December 5th. Colton, thank you so much for joining me here on the Graveyard Show podcast. This was really a lot of fun. I really wish you well with your career. You're on a great path, and we'll love to have you back on the program again down the road.
Thank you. I would love to be on the show again, and it's been a pleasure.
And as I put this interview to rest, I want to just say how impressed, and I mean impressed, I am that he did this movie in 14 days at night during COVID. Are you kidding me? And it's shocking how, I mean, 14 days is not a lot of time to do something, folks. Those of you that that work in movies or know about movies know how hard that is. 14 days, that's nothing. It really is. And the fact that they were able to get action sequences and, you know, just makeup and shooting at night, man, that is amazing. So huge kudos to Colton and his team. And there's a very interesting trend of directors who are editors. I think it's a really great thing, and you heard it with Colton, you know, how much it has helped him with his directing. And it really does make a difference, because if you have that editor's mind going on set and you're going to shoot a day, it makes all the difference, because it does. There is such thing as overcovering a scene. And you may have noticed it watching maybe a movie or TV show or something, and you're like, why are all of, you have all of these cross cuts and just it's too much. You know, back in the day, you know, you'd watch some movies and it's camera locked in, you know, in frame, or it's moving, or, you know, some directors just overcover something, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I really do look forward to Colton coming back on here, and I really I'm really interested in what he does next. Very, very talented director. Speaking of talented directors, on the next Graveyard Show podcast, Onyx the Fortuitous himself is going to be here. Well, no, not Onyx, but his alter ego, Andrew Bowser, the director, writer, and again, editor, producer of the new film Onyx the Fortuitous and The Talisman of Souls, which is going to be in theaters on October 19th. Looking forward to having him here on the program. In the meantime, you've got a lot to look at here, folks. I mean, just in the last couple of months, you have a ton of content, not only here on the podcast, but certainly on the YouTube channel. And if you're not familiar, you can go to youtube.com/@graveyardshowpodcast. That's @graveyardshowpodcast. which is the handle for the GYS on YouTube. Tons of video production on there, and even more coming up in the near future. That's going to do it for me, folks. I have to prep for my next podcast. What am I doing to myself? All right. I look forward to seeing you back here again very soon. And as you exit the graveyard, I would like to remind you to please lock the gate behind you. We wouldn't want anyone to get out, including me, apparently. Until next time. Can somebody get me some coffee? I need a lot of coffee. I got a lot of work ahead of me still.